Hey, before we get started, I just wanted to say thanks to our longtime sponsors, Aureus Medical Staffing, helping you, physical therapists or physical therapist assistants, find jobs all over this country with positions in all settings in all 50 states. Find out what they have for you at AUREUSmedical.com. That is AUREUSmedical.com.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pintcast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love
it. I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Here we go, and we're live. Hi, welcome to Happy Hour. I'm Jimmy, I'll be your host. This is PT Pintcast, a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories in the world of physical therapy. Thanks for joining. Broadcasting live from the Aureus Medical Studios, also known as my bedroom. Find them at AUREUSmedical.com. Leaders in travel physical therapy. We'll get into some travel stories in just a bit. Great show for you tonight. We're talking about what you can do. You. Yes. You. Can and need to do to help improve diversity, equity, and inclusion in physical therapy and the world that we live in. Doing the show via Facebook, Twitter, doing a video show. Now we're like a TV show. Subscribe on podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, the whole nine, and on the socials at PT Pintcast Worldwide. During the show, feel free to comment, drop any questions, that thing below. If you're watching this video replay, drop the word replay so we know you're doing it that way. And I challenge you. We've had some people take me up on this. They're like, there's no way he's nuts enough to put his actual phone number on the screen to text questions or ideas for shows. That's my phone number. Text me. Don't call. No one. We don't call each other anymore. We just text. But drop me a line. It's 845-313-1911. We'll see what we can do. There we are on the socials. And let's get today's show underway. Where's the serious music? Yeah. Here we go. Our next guest is the team physical therapist for the USAFL Women's National Team, run coach, and the owner of Sisu Performance and Physical Therapy in Seattle, Washington. She's most known for ranting on Instagram about the injustices many women face in healthcare, specifically in physical therapy. She's been known to have an argument or two like that and get angry about things and generally not stand for much nonsense. Who wants to stand for nonsense? Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Ellie Summers. There she is.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Let's throw an applause right there. Ellie, welcome to the show. First question is always the hardest. We like to get it out of the way first. So what are we drinking?
Today I am drinking this fancy gin alternative called Ritual. So it's a non-alcoholic gin alternative, and I'm drinking a version of a gin and tonic here.
I like that. Well, cheers. I'm doing vodka soda. I drink beer pretty much on every one of these episodes. So I just needed to lighten up and do vodka soda. So cheers to you. And I'm drinking out of my, I don't want to make anybody jealous out there, but I was actually an assistant swim coach on the Holy Mackerels swim team.
Nice.
We might be having some issues with technically with our live stream right now. So, if we're doing that, but we are still recording in terms of the podcast. So so you're from Seattle, Washington.
That's correct. Well, I'm not technically from here, but I live here. Yes.
Sorry, you're in Seattle, Washington, and that's where you have your, that's where you do your work. And yep. I mentioned a little bit of the things that you get to do in your work, but kind of what's your superhero backstory in this world of physical therapy?
Superhero backstory. I don't know that I have a superhero backstory, but I started my small private practice maybe a little over three years ago, and was searching for just a little bit more freedom in my work and the space to create, as well as to serve people in what I felt was maybe a better way. That has morphed and evolved and sort of niched down into work with female athletes almost entirely at this point. So that's my superhero backstory.
Your website is Sisu Seattle. We've said that word several times on this show before on other episodes, but it's always different when you ask people, what does that word mean? Because there is no direct English translation. So that's kind of, it kind of opens things up, and it's on your shirt. What does Sisu mean to you?
Yeah, Sisu is grit. It's like this unspoken hardiness that some people possess that, you know, through adversity they can use to harness their sort of inner powers, I guess you could say.
And it's Finnish, right? It's from Finland?
That's right. Yeah, it's Finnish. Yeah.
Friend of the show, Jani Kori, who's done some great work for persons living with spinal cord injury. He actually rode his power wheelchair from West Coast. He went from Santa Monica to Washington, D.C. and did his whole ride. And the Today Show followed along. Chris Reeves, actually, his son was actually following along and did a great story on it. But he was the first person that kind of let me know what that word meant. And I remember when he kept saying it to me, like when we'd hang up the phone or in emails, it was on his signature. And I was like, what's that mean? And he did one of the same thing you did, which is like, well, and then you go into this explanation. And I kind of like words like that, that don't have a direct translation into English. Right. You can kind of like put your own spin. Right.
He just had Sisu.
He just had Sisu. And the more you use it, it's just kind of like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
All right. So we connected online. We mentioned in your intro that you like to get into it and not stand for much nonsense. And you say you've been known to get into an argument or two, but an argument doesn't always necessarily start as an argument. It starts as maybe either a miscommunication or people not trying to see what the other is saying. It's just, are you there to learn or are you there to just spout what you know? And I don't think that's where we started, but I was researching, reading. Have you read this book? Have you heard of Tim Ferriss, first of all? I mean, I think a lot of people have heard of
Tim. Yes, I've heard of Tim Ferriss. I've not read the book.
So this is a great book. I picked it up on Amazon. It's like, $15. And it's like, like a phone book size. So this is not one of those books where you read cover to cover. I'm not one of those. I can't read a book this big. It's one where you drop in. And what he did was, this was really smart, I thought anyway. He picked 12 questions. And he locked these 12 questions in. And then he just asked a bunch of people that he considered someone he wanted to learn something from. And he literally created a tribe of mentors. And he just shared the answers. And I was like, dude, that's really cool. What if I totally bit off his idea and did this same idea, this tribe of mentors? Because that mentor word is used a lot in physical therapy. Much more. I mean, I graduated in 16 and I was like, who needs a mentor? Then like a year and a half out, you're like, I need 11 mentors. Like, I just... You lose that sort of like direct connection and responsibility of having to be accountable for where you're going and the direction you're going, or if you feel lost.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's where this started. So I was like, wouldn't it be cool if, and I have a lot of those moments where I'm like, I'm going to write a book. And then like 3 months later, I'm like, I just want to read a book. So I heard this idea and I was like, well, who would I put in it? What if he put like 150 people in there, but what if I did 100? What if I did 99? What if I did like 99 bottles of beer on the wall or 99 in physical therapy? And I put out a post on Twitter and I was like, who's a leader in physical therapy? Because I also didn't want it to be just who I thought, these are 99 people that Jimmy thinks are cool. That's not a good title for a book. And I think I pretty much knew what most of the responses would be, right? They're going to be the responses that are already out there. People are going to name the people who are the loudest in the room, which doesn't mean they're a great leader. What I was trying to do was I was trying to find people in between. And I don't know, like, should I have given more information? I kind of didn't want to tip my hand, even though now.
Sure.
I'm talking
about it, but you don't want to give away what you're doing.
But that kind of brought up really a different discussion, which is who are leaders in physical therapy or anything. And it parallels right now, which is a discussion that I think it's great that we're having it, bad that it exists, but it good that we're having the discussion, which is how is bias involved in the question, who is a leader? So when I ask that, how is bias involved? What's your answer?
I think it's just always involved from all directions. You will lean towards confirmation bias and bias in certain avenues. And it's really hard to like notice it when it's happening. I think especially as it pertains to sexism and racism and equity and inclusion, it really takes a good amount of self-reflection, holding up a mirror and saying, where are my biases stemming from? Yes, this person is putting in a lot of great work and is really loud and noisy, but am I consuming their content because it's easy, because they look like me, whatever. We follow our bias because it's easy. It's like the easy path. I think it exists everywhere.
It's even the word, right? You follow someone on social media, right? I mean, on Facebook, your friends, but on Twitter and Instagram, you follow them.
Yeah.
And how do you unpack that, or how do you undo that? I think in my spin around this question or these types of questions over the last month or two has been the only way to really do it is to continually say, why am I doing this?
Yep. You know,
what has led me here? Why do I think this way? Which is probably a good thing to be doing in most facets of your life, whether you're a physical therapist or just a human interacting with people. Why am I so rooted in this is what I think? What led me here? Was it fact or emotion or bias?
Or both or all.
Good luck trying to unwind that of where those things are. Yeah, you're right. It's probably a little bit of all.
Yeah, no, I really agree with that. I think it takes a very intentional practice to undo the bias our society lives in, which tends to lean on white privilege, white men, patriarchal sort of standards. And I think that it takes a lot of, even for myself, it has taken a lot of undoing to sort of see where those biases rest, intentionally seek out ways to learn and be better, and intentionally force myself out of those biases. So now I've created new biases, which is good or bad. I don't know. I think it's good, but
right. Well, you're recognizing the old and maybe you're creating new, but if you're continually paying attention to how you got to a conclusion, I don't think that can be a bad thing at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
You know, you talked a little bit about the things that actually wind up happening. I mean, I see it, right? When you go on social media, with any of these platforms, when you pick one of these things up, the first thing you see is everybody you follow. Yep. I actually heard a great quote or a great explanation. We've said it before on this show, but I think it deserves being said again, because I fell victim to the bias as well. When someone said, you have white privilege, I was like, but you don't know where I come from. So I think the best example was, it was in cycling, right? So sometimes analogies, you lose the point, but this one I think helped other people see it a little better, including myself, which was, we're not saying that you had wind at your back. We're saying that you didn't have wind in your face.
Yeah,
exactly. If you've ever ridden a bicycle on a windy day, you can understand that word. So privilege isn't saying that you have the wind. You didn't have that wind at your back. It's that you didn't have this type of wind coming at you in your face.
Right. So
that was like probably the best way to do it. Have you seen other analogies on how to explain that?
Gosh, that's not like my strength to remember analogies, but I do think that that's a perfect example of the feeling that's involved with it. And if you've ever ridden a bike, you know that feeling like of having wind at your back and then going up against the wind. And I think that feeling is very real for women in physical therapy and any space. And I think it's even more real for Black, Brown, Indigenous lives and minorities in that sense. And so I think, like, as a privileged white person, I have a responsibility to try and ensure that the content that I'm consuming on social media works against my ingrained white privilege that I grew up with, essentially, with a complete blindness to as well. So that I am aware of what that privilege is, when it might show up for me, and how I can work to correct it in my own sort of personal world, but as well as externally. And that is very hard to do as well, and very challenging in these spaces.
Not easy. Because the first reaction when you say you're privileged, what does someone do?
No.
They become defensive. Yeah. That's the motion I did. No, I don't. You don't know me, which goes back to what we said, which is probably the first thing is be reflective. What do you mean by that? Like, can you help me understand what you say, what you're saying a little bit more? It's probably a better response. That's probably the best response I've ever, someone taught me that on social media, which is if you disagree or you don't understand, right? You don't know which one it is at first. Can you help me understand that a little better? And that actually forces the person to explain, to unpack their argument and lay it out. And sometimes when they unpack it, they can
there's the holes.
Like, oh, got it. And what it also does is it signals to the rest of the people watching, because I know it's just you and me talking, but we know that especially on a medium like Twitter, other people are watching this conversation. So take that to heart as people are watching how you communicate. But it forces that person to tip their hand and show all their cards into why they said that.
Yeah.
And that can hopefully lead to understanding, but at least the people watching are saying, oh, I understand how that person got there. And I don't actually believe what they're saying.
Right.
That spreads.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really, especially my younger, I'm going to say younger, like a few years ago when I really started engaging in social media in a more like professional lens, it's really easy to be triggered by what people say and then come at it really hard. And I think that as a woman, there's a lot of threat involved there for a lot of different reasons. But I started to learn like, okay, there are certain places for me to insert myself into these conversations and certain places not to. And when I'm really like in doubt in what I want to say, I lead with questions. Everything. And I think that it's like, it leaves room and space for what you describe, like a little bit more nuance, a chance for that person to explain what they think they're trying to explain. And for me to understand maybe where they're coming from. And again, see the thought process written out, you can start to put pieces together about how somebody might think and communicate.
So you mentioned having to think about where you could or should insert yourself. We had Michael Cromartie on a while ago, and he did a great APTA Facebook Live, wrote a great article on APTA. Well, actually, sorry, a blog article on his own blog. And he described that he was going to publish this article, and people professionally and personally were kind of telling him, like, maybe rethink this because he was saying certain things about how he felt in terms of code switching. That was essentially the focus of his article. And I said, Michael, I have never, especially because I'm a loudmouth, I've never had to stop and think of where I'm inserting myself. I'm not saying I go and shoot my mouth off all the time, but no one has ever had to say, Jimmy, you know, you're a 40-year-old white guy. Like, I don't know if you should be saying something like that ever.
Yeah.
So I cannot understand, as someone who doesn't look like me or different gender or different sexual orientation, I can tell you honestly, I don't know what that's like. I've never had to do it.
Yeah, I can tell you, at least from my experience in that realm, it's very difficult. You know, you get met with a lot of personal attacks on your character. And I think gaslighting is a very real experience as well, or what we would call sea lioning.
What's that?
I don't know if you've heard of that one before. I think this is a pretty common one in the physical therapy realm, the repeated request for evidence. Show me evidence. And, you know, I have gotten to the point where I don't engage in that type of, at least on my own personal pages, I don't engage in that type of discussion because it's just so much energy and it's me working to try and explain something yet again to, typically speaking, a privileged white male. And I think that social media in general, it very much favors the loud voices in that context. And in that particular context can make a person feel like it just makes me feel like I'm crazy or something, like, you know, like I'm crazy when I don't think that I am.
You're spinning your wheels. All right. So now that we've highlighted some things that come up, what can we do about it? You just mentioned a great tactic right there. Sarah Morad. I'm probably mispronouncing her last name, but we'll share that her account on Twitter. She is like a science communications professor at University of Southern California. She's got some great tips. One of them is just what you mentioned about sea lining, which is like, you don't engage because that will go around in circles and circles and circles.
Always does.
And that's your social media diet. As I heard someone eloquently put it, if you are consuming bad stuff in, bad stuff out. So what do you suggest for people in terms of how to affect change on social media? So it's not just this, I'm saying stuff and I'm bouncing it off the walls and it's a silo. What are some other good tips for people to do?
Yeah, I think for the majority of our profession is white, right? Like, we know that to be true. We have to be amplifying the voices of Black and Brown colleagues, like, consistently, and really working to elevate them and highlight them in the spaces that we have created that are, you know, really based in our privilege. And I think that is like the most actionable step when we talk about social media. It's really simple. Go follow your Black colleagues, go like their content, you know, like, learn about them. What are they doing? What can they offer the community? What are they offering the community? And then share it. You know, your post was a good example to me because I think that you sort of put we put these broad brushstrokes, like share the leaders, and you're right. Like we bias towards the loudest voices in the room, which tend to be white men. And it sort of just highlights that, that just privileged aspect of social media. And I think that if we work to intentionally call out, like, highlight leaders, but I want you to highlight everybody, like, you know, really force people to force their own bias away and say, how can I make who I share here a very diverse perspective on our profession? I know for a fact that anytime somebody tags me in a post where it's something like that, I am flattered as all get out, you know? And I think that it's, you know, you sort of like we share and we bias towards white men and we just like continue to coax the egos a little bit more. And I think we need to just shift the vision a little bit and say, well, how do we elevate our entire profession? How do we ensure that we are being equal, equitable, and inclusive? And I think the realm of physical therapy has a long way to go in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, which is, you know, the loudest voices in the room. A lot of times we default, and I know I'm guilty on this too, in terms of figuring out who a leader is, and you check out their follow count, which is not a valid way of figuring out if someone's right or wrong, or if you identify. So they had a great post and you decided to see what they were about, and you saw they have 100,000 followers and you jump in.
Yeah.
Snowball effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's like, oh, 100,000 people think this person is great. Let's go.
You're wrong, right? But there's a lot of people in world history who've done atrocious things and had large followings. So size of following is not equivalent to quality. So size is not equivalent to quality. So affecting change on social media as simple as, but not simple, as paying attention to what voices are we amplifying and why, and which ones are we leaving out? Are there people not on this list? Maybe that's a great question, is who are the leaders? Follow up. Who's not on this list that should be?
Right. That's exactly like the questions that you yourself can ask when you're looking at posts like that. You know, who is not on this list that should be? What person is that's maybe not as loud and boisterous that isn't showing up here? And I think that those little actionable steps within your own self to consistently show up for people that need you to show up for them over and over and over again can help unravel some of the like social structures that oppress them.
Yeah, it's some of the inertia, right? Like trying to just get it moving. I mean, kudos to, I think there's been a pretty big movement in the last year that I've seen with this term mannels, which are all male panels. And it kind of goes along with, you know, things that I'm not going to get political on this, but I can talk about the political structure, especially in this country, which is there are 300 million plus Americans. And it's pretty much come down to two white guys in the history. Yeah. What you're saying is, you know, with the exception of one or two candidates like that, it's just always been two old white guys, huh?
Always.
Like those are the two best. Mm-hmm. So who isn't on this list and why aren't they on this list?
Right. Yeah. And I think asking the why is really valuable too, because of the blindness. Like, why aren't women showing up on these lists? Well, systems of oppression, one, like baseline, racism, two, you know, like all of those structures that just put white men at the top and the pinnacle and the peak, they show up in our day-to-day lives on social media. And I think that a lot of women, they aren't going to be as loud and as noisy on social media in particular, but they have a lot of content to offer, and raising up their voices and raising up Black and brown voices along with that can help elevate our profession even further.
So we talked a little bit about color. Let's focus in a little bit more on gender, role of gender and sex on social media and public forums. You mentioned it earlier, tipping your hand there, which is like, sometimes you have to think, can I interject here? Or, you know, people are going to know, you know, it's funny how we literally set up our profiles with a picture and a name. Now people are actually starting to share their pronouns, which is good. But how does the role of gender and sex on social media and public forums, how has that affected you?
I hate it. You know,
is this where the fights that you mentioned in your intro is kind of come up?
Yeah. You know, I think that I've gone through like waves, you know, and I think that, Women get bullied a lot quicker on social media and criticized a lot quicker as well. With, for example, the, you know, show us the evidence type of intent. I think men get that same nonsense too, of course, but I do think that from my experience on social media, I rarely, if ever, get heat and pushback on my voice and my message from women or Black people or brown people. I get heat and pushback from white men consistently every time. And it has certainly created very much this wall for me. It's very scary talking to white men a lot of the time. I'm worried that, you know, something's going to get twisted around and I'm going to be left feeling like I'm crazy. Right. So the space doesn't feel safe. And I have done a lot of work to try and create spaces on my own social media that do feel safe. Like, I can't engage very comfortably on Twitter anymore just because it feels so aggressively negative. And I think that, you know, if I'm a white woman struggling with that, like, it's only logical to me that Black women struggle with it too. You know, Latino women, LGBTQ women, all of the women. So, yeah.
It's important. Again, this is the similar idea, but you need to take things into account. We're talking about race, color, sexual orientation, gender, to make sure that, how did you arrive at your conclusion, or why are you rejecting this person's idea? Is it possibly because of how you perceive them?
Exactly. I think that's exactly like, I think that as a woman, you're sort of conditioned to think that you're not smart enough, you know, to offer new ideas, to make loud noises on social media, that you have to be in your place, you have to be quiet and proper. And in the realm of physical therapy, there's a lot of that professionalism talk as well, like, be a professional. Right. And I think that it, for women, it creates this constant conflict with being yourself and being comfortable with who you are as a person and showing up fully as that. And then, you know, I think that's what I try to do. And then getting people telling you that it's not acceptable to them, it can feel very tacky.
Quality.
Yeah. It's very tough. Yeah. To be in those spaces. Yeah.
So from what I'm gathering, the way to do that is uplift others' voices. And if you see this, call it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the call outs are really necessary. Or even, you know, when you're in a discussion with people, you'll see like on Facebook, I think, well, Twitter too, you'll see people like certain comments along the way and ignore yours because you're the one woman who came in and made a comment. And these sort of subtle ways that you get silenced and ignored make you feel invisible. I think liking a woman's comment, even on a post that you may not agree with what she's saying, but at minimum you say, keep coming back, keep commenting, keep engaging in this discussion because we need you. Right. And I think those little actions on social media are actually very easy to make. But it does take a little bit of intention, a little bit of, more than a little bit of intention. It takes a lot of intention.
Yeah. Take action no matter how small.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and just in terms of the emojis that we use on the show, about, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, we figured out we were using a lot, as you can see right now, the flex bicep. That's actually not me. But a lot of the times, you know, app developers, the emojis, when they first came out, Ellie, what color were all they?
They're all yellow, white.
They're all yellow, white. And now we have some options there, but it's subtle. I made a conscious effort, like, you need to use different color emojis. And so I use the flex a lot because physical therapy is kind of like the best. That's my favorite PT emoji. Yeah. But you should change it up. And if I use the word professor and that's an emoji, there are two professors, right? There's a male and there's a female version. That's pretty much the span that we have there. Make sure you're not using one more than the other. You got to mix it up.
I love that. Yeah. The context probably matters on that too, right? Like, if I'm coming into someone's post to make, you know, a fist bump or something, I may not make that on a black fist because my fist isn't black, right? I'm white. But if I'm posting and broadly sending a message and putting emojis in there, yes, mixing it up is a great way to.
It just shows that you're thinking about it.
Exactly.
Because you're thinking about it.
Right.
Take action, no matter how small, very, very important. We talked about having implicit bias rooted in racism. Knowing that we have that, that is definitely there. And whether you know it or not, again, that bike analogy in terms of, yes, in saying that there is privilege somewhere, but you might not actually know it. It's rooted in there. But we're seeing that. I think social media, I heard a great quote a while ago that says, like, you know, crisis doesn't create character, it reveals it. And I think a lot of the discussion online, it's not creating racism, it's revealing it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. 100%. Yeah, I think in our profession too, it's not talked about openly a lot of the time. You know, if we take this like tiered approach, which sucks, because I think that's just, again, the structure we're in is built on these sort of tiers and hierarchies. You know, the first people we're going to highlight tend to be men, white men. You know, the next might be white women. We have to constantly be working to like dismantle the tiers of bias and racism and pull away those layers and say, how do we get more black therapists in our profession? Like, the black therapists doing that shouldn't be the only ones working on that.
It won't work if they are the only people speaking. In fact, it will not work.
Right.
The people that need help can't be the only people providing help. That won't work.
Even coming here to talk to you about sexism is one thing, but then to talk about racism as a white woman feels like, oh, I don't know if I should be doing that, but I absolutely have to be doing it. Yeah. You know,
when the discussion really, I mean, after the George Floyd incident, when this really got brought to the forefront and people were discussing it, believe me, I was one of the first people to say, like, Colin Kaepernick kneeling, like, oh my gosh, disrespectful. And then I stopped listening. I stopped focusing on what he was doing and started focusing on why he was doing it. And all of a sudden I was like, you know what? I screwed up. And I'll say that. Yeah. And I had some people reach out and say, Are you gonna make a conscious effort to alter what you do and how you do it? And I said yes. I just don't want to. I didn't want it to come across as disingenuous. Well, Jimmy changed because he felt like he had to. Give him 6 months; it'll go back. And I really needed to sit here and be like, and do all the things that you were saying, which is like, why have you only? And then I looked back because I mean, there's a living record of who I have on my show.
Yeah.
What race and what gender they are. And I was literally about a year and a half ago, I looked and I was looking at really around the Me Too movement, kind of the same, like come to Jesus moment, like, oh man, you're doing it. You're doing the thing everybody's pointing out instead of rejecting it and saying, no, I'm not. I'm okay. Or I'm going to put an initiative. I didn't say anything. I just started to do that.
Exactly.
I didn't do it with race though. Yeah. I didn't think it wasn't the first thing in my mind until an incident like that, unfortunately, lights a spark. And that's what that's what I think we're seeing. And I hope we continue to see online and in person.
I think that's the important side of things too, is like, you know, it's an evolution and we have to be okay, like letting people start where they are and moving the ball forward as best as possible. I mean, I would love to think that we can just dismantle racism overnight and it's gone. It's clearly not going to work that way. So we have to, as white people, continue to show up for diversity, equity, and inclusion in all possible ways that we can in any given moment. You know, it's little things to big things, like whatever you can do to start to work actively against racism in our society is going to be key to dismantling all of it.
All right. So we're PTs, right? So let's equate this back to PT. We won't know if we'd have achieved a goal unless we define that goal, make it objective. Like, so
goals.
But what would success look like a year from now or 10 years from now? You can pick either one, because I mean, I think we, like you said, this is going to be tough to dismantle, right? And again, if people who are being oppressed or being, you know, marginalized are the only people raising their voices, it's not going to change.
Right.
What would a small, a short-term goal and a long-term goal? Now we're going back to PT terms. What would a short-term goal and a long-term goal look like in terms of success?
Based on any individual, it could be a short-term goal of saying, you know, I'm going to follow 5 Black physical therapists, 5 Brown physical therapists, 5 Asian physical therapists, and start there. And just like consume their content.
Listen.
Yes, exactly. That's it. And like their content so you actually see it. That's the other key, right? And long term, maybe it's, you know, taking actionable steps in your community. Maybe it's taking actionable steps in your clinic and saying, what type of patients do we have showing up here? Are they all white? Why? Why are they all white? Yeah. Is it something about our structure, something about our culture, something about how we're showing up in the community, where we're showing up in the community, what's going on there? And how can we start to move the dial to serve diverse populations of human beings?
Yeah. I mean, if you're a business owner, if you're a private practice owner, I mean, you know, you work in the Seattle area. I'm guessing you know your community pretty well. Right. If 30% of your community is Black or Brown and 5% of your patients are that way, ask yourself why. You know, are you on your about page? Are you only showing off? Does your staff look nothing like your community? If that's the case, maybe that's a good place to start, which is internal and move out.
Right. That's where I think that I started too, especially with the, you know, the protests that are happening. And I knew I was constantly kind of working towards a better future. I sort of thought, like, I'm an intersectional feminist. I believe in raising the voices of Black women and all of that. But I still have plenty of blind spots. All of the photos on my website are of me. Like, that's not representative at all. I need to change that. And it's still part of my action steps that I've put together to change that. To just work to display what I want to display, which is like, this is a safe space for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I'd be a bad podcast host if I didn't let people know where they can follow you. Instagram, Dr. Ellie Summers, Twitter, Dr. Ellie Summers, and sisuseattle.com is the website. This is not a conversation that I think should at any time stop. I like the fact that this is an evolution, as you'd said a few times. But I think to continue it is to do the things that we talked about today and then reevaluate and do them again.
Right. 100%.
Are you ready to play 3 questions?
Let's go.
Let's do 3. Three questions brought to you by our friends at Aureus Medical Staffing. That's AUREUSmedical.com. # travel PT. Do what you want to do, where you want to do it. Positions in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. Don't want to forget the District of Columbia. In all different settings. A lot of times people think travel PT is just kind of like outpatient orthopedics. It's not. It's a lot of different settings that they have. And cool locations, too. Which is our first question on 3 questions. So you're in the Seattle area, but if you could go anywhere you want for 3 months, which is typically a short-term assignment, where would you want to go in the 50 U.S. states?
So I think on the intake form, I had said San Diego, but I'm going to change up my answer and say, sure. I think it'd be Hawaii.
Why? Why not?
Yeah.
And we had a guest on the show who did travel PT for, I'm going to say 10, 12 years. And what he and his wife did was they did Aspen, Hawaii, Aspen, Cape Cod, Aspen. Like, so they always did winter in Aspen. And I was like, literally, I was like, is that possible? And he's like, I'm doing it. So possible. So you could hack your career if that term comes up, which is hack your career, do whatever you want, where you want to do it. And I think it's brilliant. So yeah, there are people in Hawaii last time I checked. So they're going to need therapists. So yeah,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. AUREUSmedical.com. Second question is a what question. What is something you've read, watched, listened to that you think the audience could get value from?
Ooh. I want to be like careful to answer here,
man,
to try and like keep it broad, but pointed.
Okay. We had one yesterday from one of our guests. Have you seen Crip Camp on Netflix? A great documentary. It's actually funded by the Obamas. And it really kind of it told the story about this group of people with physical disabilities who were put in a camp in upstate New York and where they went. And some of them wound up being kind of leaders in the Americans with Disabilities Act and that whole movement. So that was a good one. That's come up a couple times on the last couple of shows. But is there something that you, you know, think people could get value out of?
That brought me to a really good one. The documentary Michelle Obama did, Becoming, on Netflix. Incredible. Really touched on, I think, some of the struggles that Black women face in this country and even in the highest office in the land, how that showed up for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Third question on three questions. No pressure here, though. It's a who question. Yeah. Who is someone the audience should know more about?
I think the audience here needs to know about Uchenna Osai, UC Logic. She's a physical therapist in Austin, Texas. She does sexual and pelvic health. I think she is like amazing, offering tons of insight and valuable information into what diversity, equity, inclusion looks like, as well as what sexual health looks like.
Yeah. And pay attention to who you suggest to other people, right? And that's what the kind of the crux of a lot of things that we talked about today, which is pay attention to who you suggest. By all means, if someone asks for a good podcast and within physical therapy, would not be offended if you mention us. But also, like, but why? I always ask people when they say, I heard about you from a friend, I say, what'd they say that made you want to come there? It shouldn't just be because he showed up or he was the loudest.
Yeah.
It might be because he has the coolest sound effects. I don't know. That might be the reason, if you're into sound effects, but pay attention to who you're following, what you're consuming, and try to expand that network. Yeah. Frequent guest of the show, Sky Donovan, saying that their faculty today was talking about having their new DPT student orientation be about how to create a safe space that allows for calling each other out when you're acting out of bias and have blind spots, but it's challenging. Any suggestions on how to do that? I mean, you're someone who does that a lot. You mentioned in your own intro that a lot of times it winds up in an argument. But remember, other people are watching. So just because you feel like you're in an argument doesn't mean that the people watching aren't agreeing with you. So is there a good way? You mentioned with leading with questions is probably always good.
Yeah, I think leading with questions really helps. I'll share like my experience when people come to me with conflicting questions or that challenge my bias. It really helps if they approach it from a very open statement at the get-go. Like, I want, even, you know, the compliment sandwich, that helps a ton. Like, I love your content. I think you're doing great work. I saw this post. I'm really curious to know more. I know this could come off as potentially, you know, attacking you in some capacity. Like, if somebody's approaching it from a very, you can tell that they're just trying to like really learn and do the work, it's much easier to have that conversation from the get-go. And again, they're usually asking a question in the process.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, show me what evidence you have.
I heard a great sentiment that helped me in my own personal communication too, which was make sure you give the person an out or an avenue to explain themselves, or at least you're saying, so what I'm hearing is this, is this what you meant? And that's what I mean by giving them an out. Don't give them a way to escape what they said, but give them a way to explain it. And maybe if you're framing it in a way, number one, maybe you were wrong. Maybe you were wrong from the start, but the giving them an out was always good. And saying that out loud, how you said, hey, this might come across. I apologize if this comes across as inflammatory. That's not my intent. Right. Speaking that out loud diffuses it. Now they can't accuse you of that. You just said that is not the opposite of that.
It's also, I found, best done in private DMs. You know, in the public forum, there's a lot of ego wrapped up in there for both parties, for sure.
Thanks.
And I think that when done privately, if you really want to have that discussion, if it's worth it to you, you will do it privately. And if you're like kind of just wanting to cause trouble, oftentimes coming in publicly doesn't go over well.
coming in hot, I believe, is the term that we used in the last year. But so if you're really seeking to understand or to be understood, yelling and elevating your voice. Like, even like, think about this. If we were on all on a playground, right? Because everything's out like elementary school. We've learned all of our best lessons were probably from elementary school. If you were really trying to understand what someone else was saying, would you start by yelling about it louder so that more people could hear? No,
all
you,
caps.
Right. In all caps, or, you know, repeating the same question over or attacking the person.
Yeah.
No, that would draw a crowd in a negative. That would draw, you know, a crowd in a negative way. Yeah. So you're right. So that's a great piece of advice, which is seeking to communicate and understand in private. And that's possible with all these different social media platforms.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So no pressure, but are you ready for your parting shot?
Yes.
You're like, yes. Okay. It's very fancy graphics. See, people, you might come for the sound effects, but you'll stay for the graphics. Parting shot brought to you by the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Leaders in ortho PT, a lot of continuing education. A lot of people taking a lot of this time where they can't travel or maybe not be to advance your career and your knowledge. Orthopt.org. We're actually running a contest right now with the Academy. Sounds way fancier than the section, I'll tell you that. The Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Doing a contest with them right now where you can, a winner is going to get to pick access to any of their classes. So they've got the OCS exam, current concepts, or tissue tolerance. The running athlete just came out. So check out more, orthopt.org. So the parting shot, Ellie, is your mic drop moment. But don't drop that mic because I know you got a Yeti there. Mic drop moment. What's the sentiment that you want to leave with the audience as we wrap up?
What's the sentiment that I want to leave? Do the best you can to support diversity, equity, and inclusion every day.
I like that. That's very good. Ellie, appreciate you you taking some time out to continue this conversation. I hope this isn't the last time we get to chat.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And thanks for doing it. I appreciate you doing that.
I really appreciate you letting me come on here.
Absolutely. We'll talk again soon, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Love the PT Pinecast?
Yes, yes.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play.
All right, show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org.
Our home on the internet.
PTPintcast.com.
Created by BuildPT. BuildPT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
to providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what BuildPT can do for you today
at BuildPT.com.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It's poured fresh by me,
physical therapist Jimmy McKay.
Ingredients are sourced by our chief connections officer,
Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
And it's brewed fresh by producer and physical therapist
Juliet Dassinger.
And by producer and creator, second-year PT student
Bridget Nolan from Sacred Heart University.
PT Pintcast is a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pintcast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love it.
I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you found value in the show, all we ask
is that you tell a friend.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.